Welcome everybody out there for our Q3 conference call this evening. Also, on behalf of the entire IR team, I would like to wish you a very warm welcome to our tonight's call. Just as a housekeeping remark, all the documents for this call that we released about an hour ago, you can find on the IR section on our website. If you might have questions after the call, myself and the IR team is more than happy to receive your questions and to discuss the issues with you. But for now, I would like to hand over to Heinrich Hiesinger to start with the presentation.
Yeah, thank you very much, and welcome to our Q3 call. I can really reassure that the top priority for the entire thyssenkrupp leadership team is the transformation of the company along the elements of our strategic way forward, which are portfolio optimization, change management, and high-performance orientation. And we do regularly give you an update on each of our earnings call. Our today's update on the portfolio side, we were able to close the deal with Tailored Blanks on July 31st, which should give some positive effects on net financial debt and equity in Q4. For Steel Americas, we are in intensive and very advanced negotiations with a leading bidder on the sale of two Steel Americas plants. In addition, we are also in talks with other interested parties. On the change management side, compliance and corporate governance are really key elements. In order to accelerate the cleanup on the compliance side and really move forward with our new understanding and zero tolerance, we offered an amnesty program, which came to an end on June 15th without major findings. In addition, and here you can see some of the figures, we streamline and simplify our organization. Most important, in a weak market environment, we lift up our performance with, we are targeting a cost saving of 2 billion until 2015, and one important contribution comes from a higher efficiency in our G&A functions. We have recently announced the so-called ACT program, Achieve Change at thyssenkrupp. As a consequence of the reduction in our G&A function, we reduced our workforce from around 15,000 to 12,000. But most important, it's not only activity, it really shows impact, which is the name of the program. So we can really measure a consistent ramp-up on the savings with positive tractions, both on the EBIT and free cash flow side. Coming to Q3. Q3 shows further important progress in improving the performance across the entire group. We have again achieved our operational milestones and delivered on the profit and the cash targets in Q3. EBIT adjusted from continued operations came out at 332 million, which is well in line with the target of larger than 235 million, and well ahead of the preceding quarter and also the consensus. All BAs provide positive contributions, and virtually all BAs could sequentially increase contribution compared to Q3. The only exception is IS, where we had temporary billing-related weaker results, but still on a high double-digit margin. Again, our capital goods business generated the vast majority of our earnings, and if you add up the contribution of the three quarters, we now achieved accumulated EBIT adjusted figure of 802 million. So we are well on track to achieve our full year target of around 1 billion. Free cash flow before positive effects from divestments in Q3 came out at +375 million, better than promised and well ahead of the preceding quarters. Again, all business areas contributed positively, and again, the overwhelming part was coming from our capital goods side. Free cash flow before divestment in the first nine months came out at +97 million. The year-on-year improvement is 1.1 billion. So also here, we are well on track for our full year target, which we committed, shows a significant improvement and targets around breakeven. As a consequence, the net debt of the group remained broadly flat at around 5.3 billion. In the first nine months, net debt came down by roughly 0.5 billion, and this should be compared with an increase of more than 2 billion in the prior year period. The traction of our impact program has become very well apparent in our performance in the first three quarters. After the first 9 months, we could achieve savings level of 410 billion. So also here, we are well on track to deliver on our 500 million target. On the order intake side, quarter on quarter, orders came down by 8% to 8.9 billion in Q3. This can mainly be explained by lower orders at Steel Europe, where we saw a quarter-on-quarter reduction by 12%, and some lumpy order profile and delay at AIS, which is quite normal for this type of business, for the project business. On the other side, at our elevator business, they could increase order intake further to a new record level, and this was really driven by an extremely strong demand for new installations from Asia-Pacific, especially in China, where, again, we could grow by more than 20%. On our components technology side, orders at our components business went up on a quarter-and-quarter base, and we adjust the figures for divestment. This is also true on a year-on-year comparison. The positive thing is that we see some positive momentum, some increase in all parts of our components technology business. If we look up on some of the end segment, the light vehicle market, the growth is clearly driven by U.S., China, and Brazil, but the Western European markets remain still weak. We benefit from the fact that our customer base is very much towards the premium car producers. On the truck side, the momentum on the market is still on a very low level. However, also here we see some signals that the market might come back with some higher demand. Industrial component side, still a very challenging business environment. This is also especially true for the wind market. For our material services business, quarter-on-quarter intake, material service went slightly up in a very difficult market environment. On a year-on-year base, definitely, you could see that it went down virtually across all areas. There is one exception. This is our aerospace business. Last time we reported that we could renew contracts with Boeing. This time we can report that we could renew our contracts with Cessna and Bombardier. And as the business is developing so nicely, we opened up new locations, which will contribute to further growth in the aerospace segment. So our strategy of increasing the exposure to the more attractive capital good business is really confirmed by the continuous strong top-line growth out of those businesses. So if we add up the first 9 months, the orders from those businesses came up at 28.3 billion. This is down 8% on a year-on-year basis. But we saw significant gains of plus 8% in the elevator business, which is really a new record level in each of the last three quarters. And also in our project business, also we had this lumpy quarter three, which I said is normal for the project business. But if we look on the accumulated 9 months, they are up by plus 8%. So our elevator and industrial solution business are clearly the key pillars which support our top-line growth in our top line in the first 9 months and really drive our orders backlog up by plus 11% on a year-on-year basis, and they do represent 80% of our 24 billion orders on hand. The year-on-year comparison really reveals the growth potential of both businesses of elevator and industrial solution. And the growth momentum in elevator is really driven by strong new installation demand from emerging markets, especially China and Brazil. We see good modernization demand virtually across all regions and can trust and rely on a variable, reliable, and growing maintenance market. On our industrial solution side, we see significant potential on our naval business, especially in Asia-Pacific, and in order to be prepared for these opportunities, we have completed the AMT acquisition in Australia in Q2. On our process technology side, we are seeing ongoing demand for fertilizer plants and other petrochemical technologies in the U.S., driven by the shale gas boom. Resource technology side, the picture is a little bit mixed. On the cement side, we continue to profit from the infrastructure growth in Southeast Asia and also some additional opportunities in the U.S., where older plants are required to be modernized to follow more strict CO2 emission standards. On the mining side, it's a little more flattering. We see weaker growth on a new installation as the capex of our customers is reduced, but we expect that we can cushion this by an increased share of our service and repair business. We prepare for the future in those businesses. Therefore, we do also intensify our R&D activities. One example for this, we recently opened Europe's first multipurpose fermentation plant to explore new growth perspectives in the area of biochemicals, which are based on renewable raw materials. Similar to orders, but definitely even more important, is the EBIT side. The capital goods activities have strongly supported the group's earning performance, and they do represent the vast majority of group's adjusted EBIT. Nonetheless, if you look on the pillars, all business areas of the continued operations were consistently able to provide positive contributions in an overall challenging environment. And if you really listen to recent announcements, then also our Steel Europe business had if you compare it to our competition, a quite successful Q3. Quarter on quarter, overall EBIT adjusted from continued operations came out at plus 332 million, with, as I said before, a sequentially improved performance at virtually all businesses. On a year-on-year basis, EBIT adjusted declined from 334 to 332. This was mainly driven by divestment effects in weaker markets at our main component business and on the difficult trading conditions at material service. But as I said, against this, Elevator Technology could again improve its EBIT adjusted and the margin on a year-on-year basis in the first 9 months, but also in each of the three quarters. And in Q3, they achieved a margin of 11%. So for the outlook, as mentioned, results in the first three quarters are in line with our full-year target. Therefore, we confirm our EBIT adjusted as around 1 billion. We control our CapEx, so also our CapEx guidance remains unchanged at 1.4 billion, with a clear commitment that the CapEx invested in capital goods is higher than the CapEx for material business. But most important, our commitment is a track to achieve a significant improvement on our free cash flow towards around break-even before divestments. So, and clearly our impact break shows that cash and cost performance have been and will be supported by a further ramp-up in our cost-saving programs. And with that, I would like to hand over to Guido.
Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome you as well from my side and continue with the breakdown of the business areas and an EBIT split. As mentioned, we delivered on our targets in Q3 with an EBIT adjusted from continued operations at 332. Components Technologies, quarter-on-quarter, was up from 63 to 81 based on broad-based sales and earnings improvements across virtually all operating units, and also already benefiting from the successful restructuring at Springs and Stabilizers. Year-on-year, EBIT was lower, mainly due to the sale of Opaka last year. That was around 31 million. Elevator, EBIT margin quarter-on-quarter and year-on-year up to 172 million and 11% in Q3. Top line and earnings growth being most pronounced at Asia Pacific. Margin improvement was backed by continuous implementation of performance measures. In Q3, you might have seen we had further restructuring expenses in Southern Europe, so we started that at some 17 million of adjustments. Industrial Solutions, quarter-on-quarter EBIT and margin temporarily down. However, it was well in line with our target of above 10% and close to prior year quarter. The effect was mainly caused by Marine Systems, where we had in Q2 a benefit from positive aperiodic items due to the release of provisions for warranties and insurance. So Q2 was slightly higher than expected because of these aperiodic effects. The underlying rest was good, and especially quarter-on-quarter, EBIT adjusted and margin at Resource Technologies and Process Technologies went up. Material Services, EBIT adjusted in a difficult environment, year-on-year reflecting the lower prices and volumes. However, quarter-on-quarter, we're slightly up to 62 million as higher volumes and management gains could compensate a price-cost squeeze. And I think in the current environment, these are really strong figures here for Material Services. Steel Europe, quarter-on-quarter, EBIT adjusted is up to 62, reflecting higher volumes, shipments plus 1%, production plus 4%, and slightly higher average revenues per ton increasing by 1%, as well as slightly lower raw material costs. So we were clearly improving over Q2. Corporate, quarter on quarter, we improved by $27 million, especially due to a sales tax repayment that was accounting for the vast majority of this effect. Steel Americas disclosed as discontinued operations. Quarter on quarter, the EBIT, we had high adjusted losses reflecting to a certain degree already temporary technical problems at blast furnace number two at CSA. But on the other hand, we have to see that compared quarter on quarter, the aperiodic tax effect that was a benefit in Q2, where we had ICMS sales tax credits of around $100 million, is distorting the picture on a quarter-on-quarter operation. Overall, if we take a look at the underlying performance throughout the last three quarters, we have to say that it is mainly operational on the same level, slightly improving. On CSA, blast furnace number two has gone back into operation and is currently in the ramp-up phase with a temporarily increased fuel rate and specific coke consumption. So we are currently, production level is already up to 5,000 tons a day, but still we have to further work on the ramp up to stabilize it and get a PCI rate done. Steel USA, it's a continued challenging environment, above all in the service center businesses. However, we think pricing is troughed and auto exposure is increasing. The performance in Q3 and in the first 9 months was backed by our efficiency gains from our impact program 2015. The 9 months we have already realized 410 million savings, 140 out of that alone in Q3. So we're well in line with our full year target of around 500 million. Consequent implementation of performance improvement measures continues across all business areas, which is also reflected by further restructuring charges we booked in Q3. It is at Elevator further increasing restructuring efforts in Southern Europe. At Steel Europe, we're progressing with a big reloaded program, and the provisioning for the closure of Galmet, the galvanizing site in Spain, has been realized in Q3. With that, I'd come to the net loss that we had to report in our Q3 effect. And let me start with a clear explanation, because that might surprise some of you why the income from continued operations is a negative, although we had an EBIT adjusted of 300 million. And I would like to clearly state in the beginning that on normal terms, where we don't have aperiodic items like I will explain now in detail, a 332 run rate normally gets into translated into a positive income from continued operation. So to start with that one. What was the effect that really made it a net loss on continued operations? Special items at 103 million. I already explained that components technologies, we had some impairments of lines that we have to close of 37 million. Elevated technology, the restructuring was 17 million. And on Steel Europe, the closing of Galmet was 37 million. So mainly it was impairments taking place there and that have not led to any cash payments. So cash performance was not distorted by that. EBIT reported therefore comes in at 229. Interest with 250 is a rather high number, but you have to recognize that within our interest figure, we include the Outokumpu pro rata losses we have to realize. Outokumpu had a pretty bad quarter in the second quarter with 249 million loss in total, and we have an equity pickup of 70 million in that quarter out of that due to our 29.9% stake. That was double as much as in the previous quarter. On taxes, we had a bit strange effect that we had to recognize 232 million expenses of taxes. As you might probably be aware, the first two quarters were positive on taxes at 66 million. And the result why we had to put 232 million in Q3 is related to the IAS 34 specific application method of the tax rate you have to use for the full year to do your calculation for the quarterly results. That means that we have now for the 9 months accumulated a tax payments that we had to realize or tax expenses of 166 million. And that net figure gives you a much more and better assumption of what can be expected for full year figures. As you can see out of the accumulated figure, 166, the appropriate portion for this quarter would have been something like 55, 60 million out of that. And we had to recognize 232. How does that come? If you have a pre-tax income for a group that is close to zero, as it is in our assumptions and in our forecasts internally, the fluctuation of your tax rate, if you change from positive to negative, changes dramatically. And you definitely cannot distribute your expected yearly tax payments over the quarters, but IAS 34 requires that you use your tax rate to really impute your tax expenses and therefore have highly volatile figures. This happened to other companies as well, but I can clearly assure you more than 180 million out of these 232 are really aperiodic effects. So you better can take for your models the nine-month cumulated figure of 166 to predict what would be the outcome. If we were to stay at the same tax expectations and forecasts for the full year, Q4 would even be a positive tax income again. So this is really a distorted figure driven by IAS. I'm sorry for that, but normally 330 million, let me clearly highlight that one, as an EBIT figure, leads us to a positive income from continued operations. On top of that, in the taxes, 40 million includes where impairments of deferred tax assets we had to realize. The equity, on the other hand, had to reflect two mainly negative effects. One was the net loss, driven again, as I already said, by the strange tax accounting that we had to do and the higher out-of-kumpu losses we had to realize. And Forex, due to the euro that was appreciating against U.S. dollar and Brazilian real, we had Forex losses of 325. But please keep in mind that not only equity went down, the balance sheet total and the net debt went down accordingly. So the effect on the equity ratio was not as bad as on a first glance it looks like. If you take the net loss and the Forex expenses in total and just see that, how much that effect would normally be on the balance sheet total, you'd see an equity ratio that would have had to go down by 2.5% overall. It just went down by 1.5%. That shows that this Forex loss in equity has to be judged on a different way because the whole balance sheet in the currencies changed as well. Unfortunately, gearing with that went up to 185.7%, and that means that for the first time we were breaking our gearing covenant, which I will come to later on. Net financial debt stayed more or less on the same level, so it was just the equity driving up our gearing. We could keep the level at 5.3 billion. And the strong figure here was the free cash flow from continued operations before effects from divestments, where we came out at 375 million positive in Q3. And there was such a good number and well ahead of Q1 and Q2 that even the nine-month figure overall came out positive at 97 million overall. This was based on a solid positive cash flow contribution from all business areas and was supported by a continued tight net working capital and CapEx management. CapEx was even below prior year figures. Overall, quarter-on-quarter, therefore, including free cash flow from discontinued operations, net financial debt stayed at the same level. Regarding the negative free cash flow from discontinued operations, I would like to clearly highlight that the major part of the 197 negative free cash flow comes from the shortening of payment terms towards Vale for iron ore material in that quarter. Given virtually flat net debt, we had a temporary increase, as I already said, of the gearing to 186%. Looking at the 9 months 12-13, net debt is reduced now by 0.5 billion to 5.3. This represents a major swing compared to the more than 2 billion increase we had last year and reflects our structural optimization as well as a significantly reduced cash burn at our discontinued operations, given the divestment of Inoxum and overall decreasing cash outs at Steel Americas. With our stringent quarter-by-quarter cash management approach, we have successfully moved away from disproportionate year-end optimization, and we have not only eliminated volatility, but also continuously improved our efficiency. We have seen in fiscal Q1 virtually no buildup of inventories and no reversal of receivables and payables. Therefore, we have a continuous progress over the last six quarters, which was reinforced by further improvement of operating net working capital in Q3. If we take a bit more look into what we really did at our inventory management with the examples of our materials businesses, we see in Steel Europe the inventories and the days of inventories on as well the steel product as well as the raw materials have gone down in days that we really need. Quarter-on-quarter inventories are now close to historical low levels of Q4 11-12, and they are year-on-year down 1.1 million tons. Same is true if we take a look at material services, the inventories. Throughout this year, we have seen a further reduction in the DIOs, so the relative figure, not only that absolute amounts went down as volumes overall slightly declined. Even in Steel Americas, we could get our inventories year-on-year down by 100,000 tons, which was reflecting the reduced slab inventory and production at CSA, as well as still a better management of the inventories. With that, I'd like to come to the financial situation. Liquidity of the group is well secured, and the transformation of the group is based on a solid financial grounds. We have available liquidity that is well above 7 billion, which includes the 2.5 billion syndicated loan facility, which has a covenant of maximum 150% net debt to total equity at fiscal year end, which we have now exceeded. And let me clearly highlight, this facility matures next year, is currently renegotiated, and so far it is an undrawn and not used line. With the closing of Steel Americas and further pending M&A transactions, we expect the cash in to significantly reduce our net debt and our gearing. Even with that, our available liquidity, even excluding cash in from M&A, offers enough scope to cover all debt maturities. And if you compare to previous quarter, let me say, if you have seen that our 7.2 billion are lower than previous quarter, please do see that we had a debt repayment for 2012-13 of around a billion, where we now have still open maturities for this year of only 300. Last quarter, it was 1.3 billion. Furthermore, please let me remind you to consider in your models that our 29.9% stake in Outokumpu, as well as the 1.2 billion loan note, are currently and have not been reflected in these figures. They are not deducted from our availabilities here. With our expectations for the full year 2012-13, as already mentioned, the nine-month result of 802 million EBIT adjusted, we are well in line to achieve our full-year outlook of around 1 billion. This discounts for Q4 that at Components Technologies, we expect a slight sequential decrease. At Elevator and Industrial Solutions, a sequential sales and earnings improvement. At Material Services, stable sales and earnings. At Steel Europe, slightly lower volumes and slightly lower average revenues per ton. This is also backed by the increasing traction from our further ramp-up of our Impact 2014 program. So finally, to sum it up, beyond Steel Americas, there's enough value upside and increased strategic flexibility for the company.
Yeah, thank you very much, Heinrich and Guido. And operator, please take over for the Q&A session.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from Michael Schilker from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Hello, good evening, and a couple of questions from me, if I may. Firstly, I guess on Steel Americas, you are trying to sell the asset at an incredibly difficult time in the steel market. It is equivalent to more or less a steel market recession. And I guess there are two things. First of all, it's clearly a buyer's market, and I think that is making it difficult for you. So how long do you go on negotiating with one guy who clearly, I think, looks as though he's making it difficult for you before you turn around and say, actually, it's not for sale and we're going to wait? And the second thing is, how are you actually looking at the steel market itself? in terms of the underlying value of the asset? Because if you tried to sell an asset in 02 or 03, you'd have had no luck. If you tried to sell an asset in 04 or 05, you'd have had a lot of luck. And maybe, just maybe, it's a similar situation where the board should be discussing potentially just waiting and seeing, and is that a discussion that's going on at the moment? The second question I've got is, as it looks like America's is delayed further, obviously the equity ratio has come down further, and you talked several times about the sort of risks to the equity ratio and the need for a capital increase. Are these two things still dependent on each other? Can you only do a capital increase with the sale of Americas? And if you decided to go for a capital increase without the sale of Americas, what, I guess, would be the fundamental equity story? Because it clearly would have changed a hell of a lot from we've sold Americas, this is the story, to actually we haven't sold it, we're not sure if and when we're going to sell it, but this is the story. So those I guess, are the two key questions.
Yeah, Mike, let me start with the Americas. As we have clearly stated, we're not just talking to one guy. We're entertaining discussion with other parties as well in our negotiations. Yes, what is clearly important for us is that we keep track of the interests of the company and the diligence in this project, and not do a fire sale. We have always said we're not in a fire sale mode, and we won't do that. We always said we're aiming for a solution for both plans, and we're still on a good track, and we're working on it very diligently and want to get it done. The steel market overall, clearly it's not in the best situation it could be in. On the other hand, you see in certain areas that we probably have seen the trough, and you see some signals that could at least get you to a point that further deterioration might not be there. So let us continue on that one and do our work diligently, and then we see where we get.
Yeah, Mike, going forward, definitely capital increase is still an option which we keep, and also the sale of Steel Americas is an important element of a strategic way forward. It's not the only element, and the one I think that we have demonstrated strongly is the operating performance in Q3. But one is clear, for the success of the transformation, the strategic way forward, this transformation depends ultimately on the confidence of our key stakeholder groups, for which a sound financial position of the company is a key requirement. So if we receive a signal that the reinforcement of our position of strength included an undisputed access to capital markets would be required, then we would really take an appropriate approach, balancing the interests of our shareholders and those of our key stakeholders, such as the strategically important customers. And I do believe that definitely, as you said, if we can combine both methods, it would be easier. But also the success, the upward trend on all operational indicators in all business areas is a convincing story, which does not necessarily mean that both decisions need to be coupled.
Okay, that's clear. And sorry, just back to the first question. I understand your unwillingness to fix deadlines around reporting dates, which is absolutely fair enough. But have you set a formal deadline for sorting the Americas? Because it does feel as though it's going from quarter to quarter, and we're nearly there, but we're not quite there, and we're nearly there. So is there a deadline that you actually feel as though you have to get this done or walk away?
No, Michael, this doesn't make sense to have a deadline. I think for us, and we do not expect something, but for us, it's more, do we see progress? As long as we see progress towards a successful end, we are ready to invest time. So it's not a time frame. It's really we decide on whether progress is visible or not.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much for the answer. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Alessandro Abate from JP Morgan. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon. Just a couple of questions. The first one is still, of course, on Steel Americas. You're basically expecting that the disposal of Steel America will significantly reduce the level of gearing at the moment. I mean, this, of course, plugs into place the cash component. I mean, to have this kind of idea, you might be having some kind of data at hand at the moment if you're basically saying that you expect a significant decrease of the level of debt. So you should get at least a number to make this kind of statement. Then, I mean, interested party, It's a kind of intriguing situation because, of course, you have a leading bidder, but then, you're probably exploiting all the potential outcome just to get to go out of the business at the moment. On the table of your idea, a consideration that you might be keeping this asset, for example, because if you just go back to a couple of months ago and we see basically underlying signs from the economy strengthening further, I mean, there is a significant improvement in terms of EBITDA per ton. This, of course, is not something that I'm expecting you to do, but, I mean, to see U.S. steel prices $100 a ton and also some advantage in terms of export from Brazil because of the devaluation of the currency, even though they're going to have a kind of negative impact in translation effect. How does this all play, I mean, in terms of your consideration and in terms of your possibility to decide, for example, for a partial sale or maybe go into kind of joint ventures in Brazil and basically start a kind of supply agreement, offtake agreement with one of the potential partners involved? Because my question is how you can actually make a statement when you see the cash component significantly reducing your level of gearing if at the end you're basically still going through intense negotiation. The second question, of course, is on the automotive market in the European space. If you see any sign of recovery, basically, from the trough in H1 calendar 2013, what kind of expectation you have towards the year end in terms of underlying demand from auto? Thank you.
Let me take it, Alessandro. On the Americas, yes, the cash component is definitely important for the gearing, and that's what we're heading for, and that's what we're going for. This is what we have constantly stated throughout the whole process so far. And therefore, all the details and all the updates you gave, yes, the Brazilian real was devalued, so therefore that is helpful in parts of the deal. This all will be reflected in the transactions and our considerations and what we do. But again, we cannot comment on all the details, and I would clearly like to highlight here, we're in very advanced negotiations. We're not talking to just one party with a leading bidder. We have also talks, and we are in talks with other interested parties, and we remain confident on the deal overall and get it done. You have to wait for the time, unfortunately, but you can be sure that we're watching out for everything that's happening there. The automotive market in Europe, it's flattish what we see, but on lower levels.
Okay, thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Neil Sampat from Nomura. Please ask your question.
Hi there. I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, on the CapEx, it's looking like for the full year we'll be at more like €1 billion rather than the maximum 1.4 that you set out. Could you just kind of inform us as to what bits of CapEx you've basically postponed? And which divisions those would fall in, and also if earnings rebound next year, is it a fair assumption that the CapEx will grow in line with that, or is this a new approach to cash flow management going forward? Secondly, on the dividend, I guess you'll make the decision at the full year results, but could you kind of give us some parameters as to what's required for a reinstatement of that dividend? Thirdly, on the CSA outage, I guess, could you update us as to whether that's impacted the certification process at all over the last couple of months? And then finally, also on the CSA outage, I guess you've made the active decision not to take any further write-downs on the asset. Are you effectively saying that the outage hasn't had any impact on value in terms of the negotiations you're having?
Let me start with the CapEx. Yes, you have seen throughout the first three quarters just slightly above 700 million, but this is well in line with what you've seen in the previous year. We were more or less on the same level, and you will see more or less same pattern as last year. So Q4 is always a bit more CapEx heavy than the other quarters. So you would see that again. Therefore, I think your 1 billion guesstimate is a bit too low. That's going to be higher, and we will stay with a maximum of 1.4. We have not really postponed things. We have clearly watched in what can we do and how much do we really have to spend, how much can we get more efficiency out of it. So there is not a huge volume that we have postponed out of that. So pattern is like last year. For next year, it's a bit too early. We haven't given out any guidance for next year. So far, we won't do it here, but still tight CapEx management will continue. Financial situation is not that strong. Same is true more or less for the dividend. We will not give any signal on the dividend right now.
dividend overall, you will always judge in light of your cash flow and your cash position and your equity position and your income position that you will do. That will be the factors we will take a look into when we have to decide by year end. On blast furnace number two and on CSA, yes, you have seen there was no impairment overall. There are some costs related to it, but it's a lower middle double-digit figure we see that we need to spend so far on the repair work of blast furnace number two and the lower output that we have seen so far.
And the outage of blast furnace number two is not at all hurting the certification process because we have still by far enough volume out of blast furnace number one, so it's no distortion at that end.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Carson Reed from UBS. Please ask your question.
Thank you very much. First question is on Industrial Solutions on the order intake. You mentioned that it's just a normal pattern in the business. But could you just give us some kind of feeling where could the orders come going forward? Because it was quite a steep slump in order intake from roughly 1,600 million to 780 million. Is there anything to worry that we actually see order intake coming in lower also in the next quarters compared to sales, because that's the only thing I'm worried here. On the Steel Americas, you mentioned the outage of blast furnace number two. Could you give us a figure how much this actually impacted the third quarter results? And finally, over the weekend, HKM, there was an accident, I heard, in one of the blast furnaces was involved. What is the current status there, and could we expect an impact for ThyssenKrupp, or is it actually nothing really serious? Thank you.
We are not concerned about, let's say, the most sluggish order intake in IS, because you really need to understand that on a cumulated figure, we really could see a growth of 8%. And, you know, this is the nature of the business. We had these outstanding orders driven by our fertilizer business in Q1 and also accumulation of a number of cement projects in Q2, which unfortunately we could not see in Q3. But the order backlog was definitely growing. So the concern you do have that we really, with the sales which we are now, right now, reporting, we are diminishing decreasing our backlog is not the fact. It's on the contrary. Our backlog is growing, especially in Industrial Solutions.
Thank you.
And maybe to add to that one, we had to do one correction in correlation with the Q2 effect as well. So the overall quarter-on-quarter change was not that big.
Ah, okay. That makes it clear. Thank you.
Therefore, the underlying was not that bad. On Americas, so far in the third quarter, we have not seen out of the lower middle double-digit figure the biggest part of it. Maybe one-third of that has already occurred. Two-thirds will come in the fourth quarter. On HKM, yes, there was something. We will lose something like 35,000 tons of production, but the blast furnace was not affected. It was just that something else broke down. It was not the blast furnace. There's nothing wrong with the blast furnace. So we'll just have 35,000 tons less production overall and a single-digit effect for us.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Jeff Largey from Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi, good evening. My first question is just on the covenant. I recognize it applies to a facility that's been undrawn, but I just wanted to clarify, there will be a waiver negotiated, or there has been a waiver negotiated, and if maybe you could give a sense of what this waiver would look like in terms of time frame, or would banks simply remove it from the facility itself?
On the covenant. The covenant itself, the calculation within our syndicated loan, is just done on year-end figures. As we cannot exclude that we will break it for year-end as well, we will now contact the banks. This $2.5 billion line, it's undrawn, as you clearly said, and it ends next year. So we are already in negotiation with the banks on a renewal of it, and that will be ongoing. What the outcome will be remains to be seen.
Okay, thanks. And just a second question. It's on components technology. I mean, I think you alluded a little bit about to the conditions of the European auto market, but I wanted to go to one of your comments you made on the mining business and the impact of a decline in mining CapEx. Were you saying that basically the aftermarket would be able to offset, you know, the decline in, say, new installations, or just kind of soften it? And you know, really, do you think we've seen in that business in particular the worst of the CapEx, mining CapEx slowdown come through?
When I made my statement, I was just describing the business of industrial solutions. We do not expect, as our, let's say, our components technology does not have a significant service business, that, let's say, the construction and mining sector decrease in our components technology can be offset by after-sales business, so it can only be softening. Yeah. So my statement was definitely true for industrial solutions and was not reflecting the, let's say, components technology.
No, sorry, I misspoke. I meant industrial solutions. That's great. Thanks for the clarification.
Your next question comes from Rokos Braunheiser from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please ask your question.
Yes, hi. Hello, everybody. One question on the Steel Americas impairment. Could you elaborate how this breaks up on the two assets in Brazil and Alabama? And just for clarification, at the point where you're standing in terms of your negotiations, would you still accept any further impairment on the asset to make a deal work, or was that definitely the last cut in terms of the valuation of the asset? And based on what we could read in the press over the last couple of days and weeks, and news flow is obviously intensifying, is there any realistic chance that you are splitting up the assets, as obviously the valuation of the CSA asset seems to be more problematic as of today, and maybe carrying on with it and developing might return better value than executing this now? In terms of the covenants breach, is there any different pressure now on the talks, maybe because of pressure from banks? Is there any change in the view on the Steel Europe asset, as there are several discussions in the press that this could be part of a package which is now being built? I know that this 500 million big program is underway and that the benefit from this will only be visible in the next 2 years, and we are probably at the trough of this deal cycle. So is there any change in the tone or change in the view you look at Steel Europe as of today? And thirdly, on the working capital, you were still working very effectively on optimizing your working capital there. What is your view on the Steel Europe business right now? What is the order backlog doing into the third quarter? How is this comparing to previous year? And how do you see demand? Are distributors or other shorting stock levels, because some of them are betting on further falling steel prices over the summer? Is there any risk that you might miss any opportunities if the volumes are picking up in the next quarters?
Let me just start with, the media rumors about a possible consideration and sale of Steel Europe. This is really nonsense. We do not have any intention or plan, and just look on the performance. You know, still it's not where we want it to be, but if you look on the competitive landscape with our 62 million and the cash performance, which is a strongly positively one, you know, this is, in a competitive environment, still delivering, on the better end. And before Guido goes in the details, you know, in the last 4 to 5 months, every week you could read rumors about what is the situation and what is the concept and the deal structure of Steel Americas. We did never comment, and we will not comment until we really are at a solution. I hope you will understand that, because this is definitely partly media, partly tactics. Let's say we work on content and not on rumors via media.
But then coming to the impairment question you had, this quarter there was no impairment on Americas. We had one in the second quarter of 680 million, a bit more, which was broken down then. We had no impairment, which clearly shows that we obviously could demonstrate to our auditors that the current values that we do have on our hand, 3.3 billion euros, is something that is realizable, and that is a good value that can be used. On our covenant breach, as the Europe, Heinrich was already mentioning, there is no further pressure from the covenant breach on transactions that we have to do. Now, working capital, yes, we reduce and we increase performance within CD Europe, but we won't miss because out of that on any increasing demand that might be up there. Yes, inventory levels are low. Currently, everybody was very cautious on that one, so there is no risk in inventory levels, but we will not miss opportunities, definitely not.
All right, thank you.
Our next question comes from Herman Reis from BHF Bank. Please ask your question.
Yes, hello. And two questions, please. First, Mr. Isinger, you indicated that the post-decision, that means the sale of Steel Americas and a potential capital increase, are not decoupled. Can we assume that you now follow both both decisions independently? And the second question is regarding the performance of Steel Europe in the fourth quarter. Can we assume that despite slightly lower volumes and average revenues, the business area will at least break even?
Definitely we know that the combination of a sale of Americas and a decision on equity, let's say, is the easier way of doing it. But as I said correctly, we also need to understand that also the other elements of the strategic way forward really require the trust and the confidence of our key stakeholders. So in parallel on forcing the completion of the deal of Steel Americas, we really need to watch carefully those stakeholders. And really, if we would receive a signal that they are raising doubts on our financial position and our capability to have undisputed access to the capital market, then we would really take appropriate steps independent of Americas. But even if we are doing those steps, we will always consider a balanced approach between the interests of our shareholders and other stakeholders like customers and banks.
And did you receive such a mistrust?
You know, not which is reflected in our order intake or other, but definitely our customers have automatic running risk systems. They just take the figure as they are from our balance sheet, and naturally there is picking up a yellow light. So far we went into discussion. We could really explain, and the most convincing story was that our comprehensive strategic way forward and the progress we could show on the operative side and also our investments in R&D and in CapEx supporting our customers' project. So, and then they were convinced and said, okay, let's say from a pure mechanics, I think your figures are definitely in yellow, but with the full understanding of what you are doing, cleaning up the past and driving into the future, we trust you and we give you the orders. But definitely we had to go into personal talks, but so far no negative impact at all on our order intake side.
Perhaps a follow-up on that item. After the changes, Mr. Bites is dead now, Mr. Kromer had to leave the supervisory board. Have you the conviction that the supervisory board and the foundation made up their mind regarding a potential capital increase?
You know, first of all, I think it's up to the management board to make up the mind and go with the proposal to the supervisory board. And, you know, so far, in all the elements of a strategic way forward, we had substance and content, and this allowed the supervisory board, based on facts, to support our proposal. So far, we did not go in with the proposal, and therefore I believe the supervisory board did not have content to derive to a specific, let's say, opinion.
Okay.
Yeah, and let me add on Steel Europe, what the target is for Q4. As you clearly said, and if you take a look back at the last three quarters, within this difficult cycle, we haven't been negative on EBIT adjusted so far. And, well, with that, you can see what our intention definitely for Q4 is.
Okay, fine. So the guidance is very well secured.
The guidance is secured.
Yes, thank you.
Your next question comes from Bastian Jankovic from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. Just one question left from my side, and that's on the cash flow of Steel America. So I was a little bit surprised. I saw, and I think you mentioned that the CapEx, which are required for the blast furnace number 2, basically spills over into the last quarter, but the operating cash flow was quite negative, and I understood that the effect from blast furnace number 2 was, I thought, a mid-two-digit negative impact. And I guess you mentioned also in the charts show that the working capital has been lowered. So why has the operating cash burn actually gone up so much, and what would be a good underlying estimate for the fourth quarter, please? Thank you.
Yeah, a big effect was that the payment terms to Vale for the iron ore shortened. We had for a pretty long period of time, we had an extension of payment terms, and throughout this year they are reduced, so therefore they go down. And therefore, we had out of the 197 you see there, a little three-digit number out of that, so almost half of it, a bit more than half of it, was due to that effect, so therefore it was a much lower figure. You will see a smaller figure in Q4 with that as well, and, well, that's it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Sylvain Brunet from Exane BNP Paribas. Please ask your question.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. First one on Steel Americas. Could you give us the latest update on the book value we should use at ThyssenKrupp share level? And my second question relates to the Outokumpu terms. Is there any circumstance under which the current terms impacting potentially the loan note also could be renegotiated, given the tough market situation in stainless and the issues at Outokumpu? And my last question was really to get a sense of the contribution of the marine business in Q3. Thank you.
Let me start on the book value. 100% is 3.3 billion that we currently have euro for the Americas. The low note steel market, stainless steel market is difficult, yeah, but we currently do not see any indication why we should renegotiate it, and we haven't been approached on that one. So we were just imputing our interest and adding that up to the low note, because currently they don't have to pay it out.
Yeah, and the contribution on the EBIT side in our marine business was around 20 million out of the total.
Thanks very much. On the guidance, just finally, as you were commenting, you feel pretty confident there, because the essentially Q4 EBIT would imply a 30-40% decline sequentially. This is not what you've described so far. Is that the right way to read your guidance?
I think, you know, quite a number of companies are right out right now and reduce the guidance. I think for us it's good enough if we just confirm them and we are well on track.
Okay, thanks so much.
Your next question comes from Alexander Hauenstein from First Main Bank. Please ask your question.
Hello, thanks for taking my questions. Two questions mainly. First of all, regarding the auto cartel issue, the investigation seems to be ongoing, but given that you didn't find anything, how high are the chances in your view that there won't be any issue at all at the end? And the second question, I'm just assuming you would not be able to sell Steel Americas, and you would need to reallocate it back from the discontinued line into EBIT again, then I understand you would also need to add back the depreciation, right? So my question is, A, would such a move be done retrospectively for the past quarters as well, and B, would that additional depreciation hit into equity? Thank you.
Let me just take the issue of the cartel. I think our statement was that out of the amnesty program, we did not get any findings or hint which would support the allegation made in the auto cartel. But we still need to consider that the investigation of the cartel authority is, let's say, uncompleted. And therefore, we stated in our report that out of these non-completed investigation of the cartel authority, significant risk for the company out of that allegation can still not be denied.
Yeah, on Steel Americas, let me start with, we're engaged in very advanced negotiations with a leading bidder for the sale, and in addition, we're in talks with other interested parties. On your technical questions, Once, and just to talk, therefore, in general, if you go back from discontinued operations to continued operations, yes, you take the whole asset back, including depreciation. But on the other hand, what you have to take into account is that we already did significant impairments over the last quarters. And if you go back, you then have to compare the value of your discounted cash flow, what you see in the upcoming years, compared to the book value that you have. And therefore, it does not have automatically to lead to a write-down of the depreciation you have not allocated over the past. So therefore, this doesn't have to be a hit in your equity, just theoretically, to be clear on that one.
Yeah, okay, thank you. That's very helpful. It was just a theoretical issue. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Cedar Ekblom from Bank of America. Please ask your question.
Thanks very much. A few follow-up questions. Firstly, is there a time frame within which you need to sell Steel Americas for it not to be classified as a continuing operation again? So do you have 12 months or 24 months or whatever, or is it an open-ended situation as long as you're having discussions with a potential buyer, it's a discontinued business? That's number one. Number two, we obviously saw quite a big negative free cash flow number for this business this year. So far we're on over 600 million euros. Can you give us an understanding of what needs to be done for this business to actually turn free cash flow positive? You know, waiting for the market to improve, I think, is fine, but, you know, is there CapEx that needs to be invested in these businesses in order for them to be a viable model going forward? Then thirdly, you had a quarter-on-quarter weaker earnings performance for Steel Americas. We know why, because of the blast furnace in Brazil. That's fine. In terms of the fuel rates, you've had problems in Brazil with the fuel rates for some time, even before we had this outage at Blast Furnace 2. So I'd like to get an understanding of when you actually think fuel rates in Brazil will be improving. And then a technical question in terms of why you haven't had an impairment. I understand that you say you've had a discussion with your auditors and they're happy with your fair value. I assume the auditors are privy to the bids that have been put on the table. The fact that a deal hasn't been done based on those bids put on the table makes me think that that's maybe not an estimate of fair value, just at face value. So can you just sort of discuss the conversations that you've had with an auditor? You know, you haven't done a deal, bids are on the table, why is there no more impairment? Thank you.
Yeah, let me just start with a simple technical question. I think we had quite a stable PCI rate also on our blast furnace number two above 100 kilogram before we came in these unstable consideration. So it was actually running quite stable for a number of months. So it's not a general issue. It's certainly now an issue in the ramp-up of the blast furnace, but we do believe that we can come back quite soon in a rate of above 100 kilograms.
And let me come back to the free cash flow question you had on the American. Yes, we are at around 600, but as I said, the Vale impact was pretty strong in the second quarter, in the third quarter. We already had an impact in the second, and we will have in the third. So overall, out of the 600, you see there's more than 200 coming out of shortening of the payment terms there. On the other hand, what we see is an improvement for Brazil and for the overall business case that has already been mentioned here on the call as well, is that Forex, so the Brazilian real, is going down, which is helpful on the case overall. So the cost base over there in Brazil is reduced and is helpful for the asset in Brazil overall to be more competitive with a landing slab to the U.S. In the U.S., on the other hand, to improve the case, is as well, we're in the auto and in the premium sector, not as much as we intend to be. That has to come over time. That's what we always said. But if with going along with moving into higher grades, auto industry, pipes and tubes, and having higher volumes in there, there is upside in the case overall and on the cost factors, as you have seen on the PCI rate. There is things that can be done to get it overall free cash flow positive. The time frame for having something as a discontinued operation, in IFRS, you have the general assumption that you can do it for about a year. That can be extended, and you can extend it as long as you are in confident negotiations and have bids on the table and are entertaining discussions that can be successful, as long then you can extend the period, but you clearly have to demonstrate that there is a way to get it done. And the auditors, well, you have to definitely disclose whatever you have and where the current standing of your negotiations is, and then you talk what you think you can achieve, and everything that has to be considered in the contract has to be taken into account. They do definitely ask detailed questions, and they do have experts on such deals.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from Alan William from Societe Generale. Please ask your question.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. I have a quick question regarding Q3 adjusted EBIT, actually, because it was a significant beat to your own guidance, which you gave mid-May. So I was just wondering what took you by surprise to have such a strong beat in Q3.
Alain, this is Klaus speaking. Could you please repeat the beginning of your question? It was just a bit difficult to understand here. So
yes.
What was the connection probably?
All right. Okay. So it's just to understand where you have been taken by surprise on the Q3 guidance, because you gave it mid-May, and the beat is quite significant. So just wanted to understand what's the division that have been very good compared with your own projections.
Yeah, as you can see, Steel Europe was definitely in a weaker environment overall in the market, and the 62, as we have clearly said, is a strong figure. We have seen the margin improvement to 11% on elevator, which is strong as well. So we have seen at material services, they could keep the level and even increase a bit the results in a weaker environment as well. So once you give the guidance, and when we said, yes, the second half has to be a bit stronger than the first half, we already saw that we want to be better, but by the end of the day, we have to say that throughout the business areas, all of them and the sum I mentioned here is explicitly were at the higher end of what we expected. So overall, it was a good quarter, and we do see that the performance orientation in this company is really moving forward.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from Tim Huff from RBC. Please ask your question.
Yes, thank you. Just one question. Sort of on the back of that, your cost savings in the quarter seem to come in a little bit ahead of our expectations, which is good news, much of it from Steel Europe. Are you finding, as you're digging into the cost measures across the different divisions, that you're able to deliver more in the near term consistently going into next year, or are you going to still stick with the framework of 500, 750, 750 for the next couple of years?
The more we move along with our cost-saving potentials and the more we dig into the details, we find enough opportunities so far. So, and we now really see within the divisions and in the business areas that the idea of doing it and getting the projects done, doing benchmarking, and use the methodologies we were introducing here now really gets across through all the business areas, and they are looking for on their own and do it. So we have positive momentum in it. So therefore, we do see... as you see, the 410 are close to the 500 that we want to achieve this year. We're confident that we can find the way to the 750, 750.
I think one important step also here and is that, and probably here we were a little bit shy, and also our team leaders, is that in these significant cost savings and restructuring programs which we could have so far, we could always find an agreement with the unions in all the countries we are doing. And I think this is also one of the reasons with these, let's say, solution capability with different stakeholders, why we are slightly ahead of our original plan.
Okay, thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Christian Obst from Baader Bank. Please ask your question.
Yes, hello, thank you. First on portfolio management, can you give us a guidance concerning the ongoing negotiations which you currently have, not for Steel Americas, but for any other parts you are selling, and what you intend to sell in the coming quarters. Then the impact on from Taylor Blanks, which we can expect in the fourth quarter. Then concerning the rail cartel, can you give us some kind of a time frame for the end of the negotiations with Deutsche Bahn and some other companies there, and what is your currently your worst case or is the upper end of what you can expect, what you have to pay? Then concerning cost of impact or for the impact, what is the time frame for the negotiations with the unions, and when can we hear something more from that? And what is there the upper end for the cost you are expecting there? And the last one is on elevator. So the margin is stepping up, so step by step a bit. Are we on our way towards the 15%, or is that some kind of low-hanging fruit and further improvement will be much more difficult? Thank you.
Let me start maybe with your portfolio questions. As we have clearly outlined on page number two, the projects that are ongoing and that we have on our that we have officially stated here is Burco, Steel Americas, Electrical Steel and Railway and Construction, where we are starting, Electrical Steel grain-oriented. On the Taylor Blanks transaction, we have not disclosed the figures. We won't do it here. So you probably may be able to recognize in Q4 what the impacts were, but we clearly will not state the figures here, but it was positive on the cash flow and the equity.
Coming on to the cartel issue in negotiation with Deutsche Bahn, first of all, as far as the cartel authority is concerned, let's say the issue is settled now.
Yeah.
Now, when we made the announcement on our compliance issues on 27th of July, we made reference to Amnesty with a lot of others, and we also made reference on the negotiation with the Deutsche Bahn. And the sentence which we used was agreed prior to our announcement with Deutsche Bahn, where it was said we are in very constructive discussions to find an appropriate solution. We will not give any more hint on what might be the range of the settlement. But both parties have the understanding that we are on, let's say, a way which makes sense.
Yeah. On the impact program overall, the time frame for agreements with the unions, there are several agreements that have to be done, so over time they will come in. We're in good and constructive negotiations, but this is not only a program that is affecting certain parts of the company in Germany. The big part is Germany, but it's different parts there as well, and international parts as well. So there's not the one big thing with the unions that will come. There are bigger parts in Germany that will come later on, and then we will publish accordingly what the cost base and that will be for it.
I think what is very helpful here, and this is different to other companies, we never gave a figure what is a target to reduce workforce, because we are not interested in to achieve a figure in workforce reduction. We are interested to achieve a figure on savings, and we tackle it, let's say, business by business, and therefore we negotiate it business by business, and we found out that these content-driven way also allows to be in a constructive, not in an easy, but in a constructive dialogue with the union.
Yeah, of course, but I haven't asked for the for the workforce or for the amount of the workforce you maybe spin off, but for the costs, so the related costs, and maybe it's more interesting to bring this cost into the next business year and to wait a little bit longer because of the currently stretched balance sheet, and the same is true then for the negotiations with Deutsche Bahn.
What we definitely want to do is, as we clearly have said here, we want to continue with our strategic way forward and get it done. And I think in the past, very often the company has reduced programs whenever financial constraints were there, and therefore we want to continue with that one, and we really want to get it done. Yes, the financial situation is not that easy, so we'll have to find a way of balancing it the right way, but we definitely want to continue and not to slow down.
Okay.
On a strategic way forward. That is very clear. Let me clearly highlight that.
Okay.
We want to continue, and that has to be done. And that has been part of the considerations Heinrich has given on the question of capital increases as well. We clearly have the target to continue on that one.
And that is absolutely necessary, because also we see tremendous progress in the Q3. We are not at the level where we want to be, so waiting doesn't make – it's not an option.
Yeah. Of course.
An elevator – we now reach the level of 11%, and we have seen continuous improvements through the quarter in this year. So we are on our way. As I always said from the beginning, the 15% for me is good, but what I want to see is continuous improvement. And I don't see an end or just getting it very tough for the next quarter. So I think continuous improvement, like we have seen so far, can continue and will continue.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is again Klaus speaking. I think with these comments from Guido and Heinrich, we have reached the end of the conference call.
And we would like to thank you very much for participating in the call and for asking these very interesting questions. If you might have any further questions after the conference call, as I mentioned already, the entire IR team and myself, we are extremely happy, more than happy to discuss things further with you today or tomorrow or in the following days. And we look very much forward to speaking with you again and wish you now a nice evening. Thank you very much and bye-bye.